Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson. The hunger for great places to put one's capital that are good for the earth, good for local economies, and good for the investor is immense and intense. And here at peakprosperity.com, we talk a lot about the need for new models of doing business that comport well within the growing economic, energetic, and environmental constraints bearing down on all of us. Well, today I'm pleased to welcome back Craig Wischner. Craig is the managing partner of Farmland LP, a fund that serves as a great model for sustainable business. And that's not just my view. Farmland LP was just recently named as one of the world's 50 most innovative companies by the magazine Fast Company. And in 2013, it was selected for Impact Assets 50 as one of the 50 funds who lead their field in creating positive social and environmental impact while generating financial returns. Now, the way the farmland fund works is investors put up the cash, which allows Craig and his team to acquire conventional farmland and convert it to organic, sustainable farmland for the purpose of long-term cash flows and capital appreciation, plus all of these other awesome benefits. We've since watched with excitement the success that he and his partner Jason Bradford have had in making it a real and thriving enterprise. In fact, that success cut off the opportunity for new investors as it filled up and got closed off. Well, Craig is here today to tell us the good news. There's a new fund opening up, and it's got a more accessible structure for most investors, and we're going to hear about how the other fund has been performing. Craig, thanks so much for joining us today.
Very glad to be here.
So first off, for those who somehow missed our earlier podcast, please describe the Farmland LP business model for our listeners.
Sure, you did a great job, but we buy conventional farmland and then convert it to organic, sustainable farmland as an investment fund. And basically, the fund is designed to give investors ownership of real assets, of farmland, which we think is one of the most ideal assets to invest in. But it's really quite challenging to invest in as an individual, because in order to really get the most value out of it, you have to manage it well. And just like apartment buildings need management or commercial office buildings need management, we're experts at managing farmland. And, you know, typically farmland generates a fairly low cash flow rate to investors compared to apartment buildings or commercial office buildings. And that's primarily because, 40% of farmland in the U.S. is leased, but it's primarily leased for growing commodity crops. And these commodity crops are typified by having a relatively low revenue per acre and also high costs of chemicals. And we really switch that management over to a more intensive form of management. And basically, instead of just having one farmer grow one kind of crop on one piece of farmland, when we buy farmland, we really transform the way that it's used so that we have multiple farmers, livestock farmers, crop farmers, vegetable farmers, in a real sustainable agriculture rotation. And that generates more revenue per acre. There's great cost savings on the chemical side, and that results in more profits for the farmers and also more cash flow for the investors. So, you know, that's might sound a little bit complex, but at the end of the day, it results in investors being able to own farmland that's managed better in a way that generates more cash flow for them and really is a nice long-term sustainable investment for everybody.
Well, let's talk about that. So beyond all the lovely awards and recognition, how's this model really been working out for the land? I assume you have some measures around whether the land is improving or not. And for the farmers, does it work for them? And then finally, for investors, let's start with the land.
Great. Well, we own just under 7,000 acres of farmland right now in Northern California and in Oregon. And 783 acres have already been converted to certified organic farmland. And that means we've taken it through a three-year conversion process and can now, when our farmers sell crops off of that land, they get to take advantage of the 50 to 200% price premiums for certified organic goods. And the key part of what we do, though, is more the broader sustainable agriculture. Even though some of our land most of our land is going through the organic conversion process right now, almost all of it is being managed in a sustainable way, which means we plant actually a tremendous amount of pasture on cropland and then bring in livestock producers. And that sequesters a tremendous amount of carbon. It eliminates a lot of fertilizers and pesticides from going into the soil and the water and the atmosphere, and in addition to lowering costs for the farmers. And so it really is a much better way of managing farmland. And you know, certainly the farmland and the people who live near farmland or eat food off of farmland benefit from that. The farmers love it. The farmers get access to, these are the farmers that we work with are successful farmers. They're producing organic crops or they're producing high quality livestock. We work with Bill Nyman of BN Ranch, who produces super premium grass-fed beef, and Cattail Creek Lamb, which produces premium quality lamb. And these producers get access to our either certified organic or transitional organic farmland, and they get to produce really high quality meat in a way that changes their business, and they get access to much more land than they would be able to afford on their own. So the farmers are extraordinarily happy with this as well. And our investors are also very happy. There's two forms of returns that we generate. One is from the appreciation of farmland, and the second is the cash flow that we generate. We haven't done any distributions yet. It's not in the plan. We tell the investors not to expect cash flow for the first 2 to 3 years while we're taking it through the conversion process. But our revenues have been increasing substantially year over year. And, the plan is, and we expect to do it, to generate some cash flow distributions this year. It's not guaranteed. Lots of regulatory disclosures inserted there, but but that's the plan, and we expect that to happen.
And if all goes according to plan, when this is really running, what would be the sort of rate of return you might expect? In what range would be available there?
Well, we're buying farmland. Farmland is basically selling today on average for 3.5% cash flow to the asset. And what we focus on, we use 20 different metrics to analyze farmland before we buy it. And one of those metrics is being able to show to ourselves that we can generate 6 to 8% net cash flow to the investor after a 4 to 5 year conversion period. So initially we're investing in planting pasture and putting up livestock fencing and improving the land, and then ramping up to that 6 to 8% cash flow after 4 to 5 years.
Right, but much of the early cash flows are going into improving the property from a substantial standpoint too, right?
Exactly right.
All right, so let's talk about the new fund that you are envisioning at this point in time. First of all, what is it and what are you targeting here?
We're putting the finishing touches on the next fund, which will be a REIT, a farmland REIT. And
what's a REIT?
If you're not familiar with what a REIT is, a REIT stands for a real estate investment trust. And that was created in the 60s as a legal structure for people. It was really set up so that investors could invest in a portfolio of real assets like real estate in the same way that they invest in companies. So you can invest in Microsoft and Google and Amazon by buying a share of that company. And until the 1960s, there was really no great way of investing in a share of a portfolio of cash flowing real assets. And so to recognize that real assets are different, they set up this REIT structure so that REITs can only hold cash flowing assets, and at least 90% of the cash flow must be distributed to the investors each year. And as long as you follow a number of requirements, then those cash flow distributions are basically tax advantage, essentially tax free. Normal companies are subject to double taxation, so they're taxed at the corporate level, and then when you get your dividends, they're taxed again. The REIT structure allows that cash to be distributed tax free at the corporate level. So it's really a very nice way for investors to both get the advantage of a portfolio of appreciating assets, as well as get cash flow in a tax-advantaged way.
Now, are there any other farmland REITs out there right now?
There's one publicly traded one called Gladstone, and they buy pure conventional farmland. They lease it out. They say in their documents that they intend to, when possible, basically sell it to developers. So they want to own farmland for a period of time and then sell it to developers. And we think that's a... Mm-hmm. We prefer not to do that. We actually think that farmland is an extraordinary asset, and we want to own and manage it for a very long period of time. And we think that basically the ability to produce food is going to be worth more than condo land in the future. So some slight differences on that. But really, what we do, Farmland LP, is really the only way that we know of, and we know quite a bit of ways, for investors to be able to participate in helping buy high-quality farmland that is managed sustainably and designed to give investors, you know, long-term ownership of farmland and long-term cash flow. One of the nice things about the REIT structure that we're setting up, initially it's going to be a private REIT, meaning not traded on the public stock market, and it is limited to accredited investors, but we have to have at least 100 investors in order to be a REIT. We can have up to 499 investors in this fund, but the plan is after we acquire $250 million or so worth of farmland, increase that cash flow, then the plan is to take it public as a REIT. And so that anyone can really invest in farmland, benefit from the cash flow. And also when we're public, basically anyone, including farmers or investors, can invest in this farmland and also help us buy more farmland and convert more farmland to organic, sustainable farmland. And that really for us is the ideal way for, one of the ideal ways for farmland to be held and managed. Farmland to us is really a public good. It's really a commons, and right now it's all privately owned and to some extent immune to customer demand for organic and sustainably produced food. And there's a real imbalance between the demand for organic food and the supply of organic farmland. So our fund is one way that we can help bridge that gap and really bring farmland ownership back to being really part of the commons, partly, you know, held by the people, which is great.
Now, when this REIT goes public, I presume that means that the requirement to be an accredited investor drops at that time?
That's correct. Anyone who, you could go to any one of the discount brokerages and buy a share of the stock.
Fantastic. I mean, I love the idea, particularly to help this get out to a much broader range of people, because I think it's a fantastic model. So tell me about the properties that you would be targeting. This will be a pretty big step up in your holdings at that point, I would assume. So first of all, you know, what are you looking for in general, but specifically, do you have your eye on certain areas and maybe properties that you don't have to divulge at this point? And then thirdly, around that, how are you going to manage that scale?
Great. So we currently manage $50 million worth of farmland. And so this would be a fivefold expansion of that, going up to $250 million worth of farmland. We that fund is going to be focused on five distinct geographies or types of farmland. And it primarily our focus is the U.S., and so we currently have farmland in Northern California and Oregon. We would expand in those areas. And then there'll be a third location on the East Coast. And then there'll be two additional areas that will basically decide after we raise $100 to $150 million. And the reason for that is that when we look at our 20 major criteria that we use to buy farmland, part of that depends on the price of farmland and the cash flow that we can generate from that farmland after we convert it. And the farmland markets are somewhat dynamic in terms of their pricing. And so those areas will be determined basically in a year or two or more, depending on various pricing components.
Well, that brings me perfectly to my next question. I want to talk about risks. You mentioned dynamic pricing. That's one way for it. Is there a farmland bubble?
One of my favorite books is Extraordinary Delusions and the Madness of Crowds.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that was written 150 years after the tulip bubble. And, of course, there were many, 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 many other bubbles throughout history. And you'd think after 150 years we would learn. But, you know, it's very hard to tell you're in a bubble. We actually as human beings live on a bubble. Our planet is mostly rock with a tiny little thin atmosphere and water on it, but you think that we were the center of the universe.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, it's just a tiny little bubble that we live on, but it's immensely hard to tell from inside a bubble that you're in one. And so one of the ways that we determine if we're in a bubble or not is by looking across asset classes, and we look at factors that may be affecting it. And so there are different, one of the main bubbles that I see actually, and actually maybe delusions or madnesses, is actually with the $5 or so trillion of printing that the central bank is doing, mm-hmm. and artificially keeping interest rates low. That to me has created a tremendous bubble in the credit markets. We also think there's bubbles in the stock market as well. And one of the nice things about real assets is that you can look at those assets based on the cash flow that they're generating. And it certainly is impacted by some of the macro factors, such as interest rates. And we definitely see some signs of bubbles in the farmland. One of the interesting things is that the total value of farmland in the U.S. Has increased basically over the past 8 years from $2 trillion to $2.9 trillion. And most of that gain has happened in Midwest farmland, primarily in the commodity crop growing regions where they grow primarily corn. And so we definitely see farmland bubbles in the Midwest. We were able to buy farmland of equal or better productivity in California for about half of the price of
really?
That same productivity that you would get in the Midwest.
Wow.
So it is, these bubbles are regional. These bubbles are depending on crop types. We break things down into the major different geographic regions, central U.S., East Coast, Pacific Northwest, Southwestern U.S., et cetera. And we also break them down by crop types. So commodity crops, permanent crops, such as grapes or citrus orchards or apple orchards, things like that. And dairies are another class. Pasture land is another class. And we see that there are different sectors that have different levels of bubbles in them. Almond land, for example, in California, mm-hmm. huge bubble on that land. And same with the corn land in the Midwest. But there are other sectors, for example, dairy, that is absolutely being crushed right now, partially due to the high cost of hay. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of land has been converted into almond orchards or other things. So we do think that there are some bubbles. We do see a general pricing inflation on the land that's, I think in general, we're kind of on the borderline of a bubble. It's just inflated, but it's certainly not inflated compared to some of the other asset classes, but we are cognizant of risk. But one of the main things is that farmland is not an efficient market in the selling market. Two pieces of farmland right next to each other could have very different water rights, but they might sell for the same price. And so if you're not able to analyze for water rights and water, you might get crushed. Another component is that there are these different geographies. So if you look across at the Midwest or you look at California, that certain prices, it's on a productivity basis, it's just going to vary in terms of price. And we think some of that is madness and delusions. And we rely on cash flow as our primary metric for grounding us. What kind of biological productivity can we get from each piece of ground? And what kind of economic value can we generate from the selling of that food? And that is what grounds us and kind of keeps us away from the bubbles. And so that's why in some areas, you know, one piece of farmland, we may be interested 1 year, but if the pricing changes dramatically, we wouldn't be interested in that or vice versa.
I imagine this also presents some, let's say, stability for the farmers who are leasing the fields, because they're not in on this for the full capital amount, right? There's, you know, farmland prices have gone up a lot, but farmland debt has gone up a lot. And so what you're doing is removing that debt component, at least for the people who are working the land. So as long as there's demand for the product, I can imagine that the cash flows have a pretty good chance of being there. Is that a fair way to look at that, or am I overstating something?
I know it's a very good way of looking at it. You know, commercial office buildings are a great analogy here, that For my business, I rent office space. And when I double my employees, when I double my business, I add more office space. And it's nice and simple. For farmers, when they double the size of their business, they have to buy a whole new piece of farmland, or the equivalent is me having to buy a whole new office building every time I want to double my business. That's madness. And it's even worse for organic and sustainable farmers, because it takes 3 years to convert that farmland to organic farmland. Those farmers have to basically double the size of their land and then take it through a 3-year conversion process before they can actually sell their products to their core markets. And then all of a sudden they have to literally double their sales that next year in order to start generating the proper revenue on that. And this is made all the more worse by this 3.5% cash flow to the asset that farmland is being priced at, basically a 3.5 cap rate, if you're familiar with real estate terms. And this means that it's very expensive for these organic and sustainable farmers, the ones who are doing the best thing for the land. It's very difficult for them to actually grow their business. And that's why the conversion of farmland has been far slower than the growth in organic food. Basically, 0.7% of U.S. farmland is certified organic, while 4% of the amount that we spend on food is organic. So what we do is we're able to buy large tracts of land. So we've bought land as much as almost $30 million, which I don't know too many individual farmers who can afford that. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to buy these large tracts of land that previously were growing just commodity crops, just literally three commodity crops on a $30 million piece of farmland. And we've been able to change that land use. And so we're bringing on many more farmers doing many different kinds of things, sheep, cattle, a variety of different crops, and really increase the economics, the revenue that that farmland can generate. And the farmers absolutely love it, because they don't have to go into debt. We'll make this first fund unleveraged. Basically the farmers are just not exposed to any of that debt at all. And we actually love to do either revenue sharing or profit sharing with the farmers. That if they have a bad year, we have a bad year. And if they have a great year, then they're still paying this just the normal percent of revenue or profits that they would have paid had they been exposed to all the risk of owning the farmland and being in debt. And so it's really a much more fair, much more aligned method of working with farmers. And it's just simply a better way of managing the farmland.
Boy, talk about heading towards the future on all this. I love that whole story. And I know that someday we're going to 100% organic farmland, and we're at 0.7%. So I guess there's some legs on this story, because we have to go back to a sustainable way of producing. And I know a lot of people who are in their 20s and 30s, bright and shiny, not a lot of capital, but boy, they're ready to do really amazing, complex things. To really farm sustainably is complex endeavor. And what I love is that you are in partnership with the farmers to help manage both the capital side of that and the complexity side of that. You know, with Jason Bradford, they're really helping to manage and oversee all of that. It's you know, farming is not of the future is not going to be easy. And but here's the thing, you know, Wall Street likes to take our what I heard somebody call our lazy money. You just send it off and hope for the best, you know. But to really build assets takes talent and it takes hard work. And so your fund is a way to engage a person's assets in some really good fundamental hard work that needs doing, and that you're able to do it in a win-win-win way. It's a fantastic story.
Well, yeah, you mentioned Jason. Just spent the past couple of days at our farmland with Jason. His name's Jason Bradford. He's a PhD. He's my business partner. He runs the farmland management side of the business, and he's just absolutely extraordinary. And he really understands sustainable agriculture and really focusing on maximizing the biology of the soil to increase the biological productivity of the cropland, which results in better economics. It's pretty actually simple. Agriculture has been in place, modern agriculture, not modern actually, just agriculture has been in place for 10,000 years. And really starting in the 1600s, we developed what is basically considered the modern crop rotation. And that's the four-field rotation. It incorporates legumes, which are nitrogen-fixing crops, plants that basically add fertility to the soil. And that worked extraordinarily well for a long period of time. And what it looks like, though, is diverse use of the farmland. And in 1950, U.S. farms produced an average of 5 crops per farm per year: livestock, vegetables, grains, in a nice sustainable agriculture rotation. And it was really the leftover munitions manufacturers, the people who were in World War II, basically we developed this tremendous infrastructure for building bombs. And that was ammonium nitrate as the primary ingredient there. And then really in the 50s, they said, hey, if we put this ammonium nitrate on farmland, it actually makes it more productive. It restores the nitrogen. And so what that did is it allowed farmers to basically kick livestock off of the land and put them in the feedlots and really eliminate this rotation. And so from 1950, we had 5 crops per farm per year, to today, we have 1.2 crops per farm per year. We have almost eliminated diversification on our farmland. And that is unsustainable from the standpoint of good soil biology and agricultural history. The result, the economic result of that is that we now spend almost 15% of the entire revenues generated by farmland on chemicals. So fertilizers, pesticides, and genetically modified seeds are the result of the loss of that soil fertility. And that number can be dramatically reduced and actually produce more food per acre if we do pretty straightforward things like put more cropland back into pasture and bring livestock back onto pasture. Now, with today's modern economics, that has to be done at scale. It's too complex, we believe, at a large scale for one farmer to produce sheep and cattle and vegetables and grains. It's complex to produce that, and it's complex to distribute those out to the market. And so by us looking at farmland and managing it like an office building that has multiple tenants, what's the best way to manage an office building? Well, you find a great tenant for the penthouse, you find some retail tenants for the bottom, and you put great tenants in the building, and someone's responsible for managing that. We look at farmland as we're the land stewards. We're responsible for making sure that the land is managed well. And so we say, oh, great, you know what? 60 to 80% of this land needs to be in pasture all the time. And you know what? To best manage pasture, you need cattle producers and sheep producers, and you need pastured egg producers. And that should be in pasture for 3 to 7 years or more. And then after that land is certified organic, after that land is fully fertile, then you can rotate organic vegetable farmers onto 10 to 20% of the land. And they'll get great productivity because of all the natural nitrogen that's in that soil and no disease pressure that otherwise they'd have to spray all kinds of chemicals onto the land for. And after 2 to 3 years, they've used up that soil fertility. They get to move on to the next piece of fresh organic pasture, and we rotate in a grain producer or put it back into pasture for the cattle managers. This is an extraordinary and wonderful way of managing farmland. It's the way that farmland in some ways was managed sustainably for 400 and 500 years before this, and we really think it's the way it's going to be managed in the future. The new economic framework of a REIT that was created in the 60s is a great way for basically everyone to be able to participate in farmland being managed in this good way. And we think we're a good example, and maybe a 1.0 example, but a good example of what's possible for the future.
Craig, that was just an absolutely fantastic description of all that. And I couldn't be a bigger fan of what you're up to, and you and Jason have put together just a beautiful structure, and I just love how it works. So I'm sure there are going to be a lot of people interested in this. How can an interested accredited investor learn more?
So the REIT is not open yet, but if you're interested in learning about it when it is, then you can certainly go to our website, www.farmlandlp.com. You can send us an email at info@farmlandlp.com. You can also sign up for updates on our essentially our blog on our news page. We really believe in communicating what we're doing, and we think that pictures are an extraordinary way of communicating about what we do. So our blog, which is at farmlandlp.com/news, really has a lot of farm updates. It has regular pictures, and we also do thought pieces, really kind of explaining some of the background and the detail of what we do and why we do it. And so I think your audience is going to be very interested in the information there. You can also sign up for regular updates there.
And we'll have all of the links to those things at the bottom of this podcast at our site. So you can just look up at the links there and click on them, and you'll get right over to those places. Final question, when do you think what's the range of times when the REIT might be finished?
It'll be open this quarter.
Open this quarter. Fantastic. All right. Well, Craig, it's just been an absolute pleasure talking to you again, and I'm really looking forward to helping see this REIT become a success and go forward, because what you're doing is so important.
Thanks, Chris. And what you're doing with communicating the intersection of energy, the environment, and economics is really just absolutely extraordinary and cutting edge. And the audience that I've met a number of your audience members, and they're just extraordinary. They just really get it. Life is not one-dimensional. Life is not simple. Yet you communicate the complexities of where we are and where we're going in a way that is simple and straightforward. So thanks for your work.
Well, thanks for that. And I'm glad that there's responses to it that make sense and feel good. And that's what Farmland LP is. It's just leads the way that says, look, we can be clever about this. We can do good and still make the world a better place. It's all possible. We just have to get out of our mindset that we send our money to Wall Street and they do horrible things with it. We can do better. And that's what you're doing. So thanks for that. And I hope to have this podcast again when we have more to talk about.
I look forward to talking to you soon, Chris.
Thanks.